You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In 2009, the British daily The Guardian published a story that exposed what has now become a worldwide scandal of phone and email hacking carried out by British tabloids owned by Rupert Murdoch's media conglomerate News Corp. At the heart of the scandal is the now-defunct weekly tabloid paper News of the World, which hacked the phones of royals, celebrities, and crime victims in Britain and the United States. And Murdoch papers were also accused of paying bribes to British police and public officials. Since, former newspaper employees have been arrested and questioned, a police chief was forced to resign, and both Rupert Murdoch and his son James have testified in front of a parliament committee, maintaining they had no knowledge of any wrongdoing. Murdoch's Scandal, a new Frontline documentary produced in collaboration with the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, airs on PBS stations tomorrow at 10 p.m., and I'm very pleased to welcome back to our show Frontline correspondent Lowell Bergman. Hello.
Hi, nice to be here, Leonard. How are you?
Although this hacking scandal has only recently been a major news story, we now know that the phone hacking scandal by these tabloids is nothing new. How far back does it actually go?
Well, we don't know how far back hacking itself goes in terms of, first of all, in terms of cell phones, it appears it goes back to at least 20 years, particularly back to the days when they were analog and it was a lot easier to do it. But we do know now from testimony in England and other commentaries that have been made that the other aspect of this, which is the bribery of police as a regular practice, appears to go back as much as 30 years, ever since Rupert Murdoch bought the News of the World and revitalized The Sun, which became the largest selling newspaper in England and one of the largest selling English language papers in the world.
Is it assumed that this only was done by papers owned by News International?
Phone hacking appears to have spread to other competing tabloids, and some of the activities described and what's been going on seem to involve some of the other tabloids. But I think everyone agrees that the center of action was News of the World and then The Sun, variously between hacking and bribery.
Did the reporters receive phone hacking courses? How did they know how to do this?
Well, at one point where it gets a little bit more difficult to do it, about 10 years ago, it appears that private investigators were then employed, more expert at doing these kinds of things and other intrusions into privacy, and actually were put on staff of the newspapers. In one case, a private investigator just a few years back who was hired on to do surveillances, and these included surveillances of members of parliament who were investigating News International, the News Corporation subsidiary, they were urged to join the Journalists Union by management.
I would guess that most of the reporters, at least at News of the World, kind of knew what was going on. Do we know if any of those reporters refused to do this sort of thing because they considered it unethical?
We know from testimony a week and a half ago from the head of the Crime Writers Association in Britain, who was hired by News of the World, he says, back in the early 80s when he was a much younger reporter, and he covering the police, that he was told he should bribe the police, for instance. And he never did, and he testified, offered and urged by his editor to use a slush fund that they had for bribing the police. And he continued to refuse, and his career there, he said, went downhill, and he eventually left. So bribery seems to have been going on for a lot longer in terms of the relationship of these News Corporation-owned entities in the UK and law enforcement. Hacking seems to be, that is, getting into people's cell phones, well, cell phones aren't that old, and doing it wholesale, doing it in the thousands of voicemails, that emerged in the first inquiry in 2006, and those numbers seem to indicate that they were done primarily by private investigators. But as we know in the Millie Dowler story, the thing that blew the lid off of this and made it a worldwide story in early July, that there was phone hacking done on her phone, not just by the PI, but by the chief reporter of News of the World, which he's admitted.
Now, did the police tell them how to do this sort of thing? We're talking about Scotland Yard as well as local police.
Well, The bribery now seems to spread from in the investigations from Scotland Yard as being a major center of where police were bribed, and also where social favors were given, champagne parties, and sort of swapping of jobs. That is, executives of the tabloids going to work at Scotland Yard, and some people at the news at the Metropolitan Police becoming, for example, in one case, a columnist for a News International newspaper in London. So there was a back and forth going on here on that level. How far it goes from the Metropolitan Police and Scotland Yard is not clear yet. We know that there was a recent arrest of Rebecca Brooks, who was the executive charge of News International for bribery, and recently she was questioned again about bribing people in the military. And we know there's been some indication of people being bribed in the health services as well for stories.
No one from the Murdoch Media Company agreed to speak with you for the documentary. Do all the top executives continue to maintain that they knew nothing of what was taking place?
Well, here's the extraordinary thing for me. Here's a media organization that calls itself the News Corporation, and it is yet to come clean with its readers and its audiences about what went on here, both in England and to some extent it now seems to be bleeding elsewhere, and I can get to that in a minute. What did happen? When did it happen? What are they doing about it? They're not talking about it. So in the end, I was getting shut down so many places. We sent out over 24 letters to everyone from the board of directors, to the member of the board who's in charge of the internal investigation via DIN. Even his press person stopped calling me back. And the only letter I got was a personal letter back from Rupert Murdoch. In one line, he basically said, I'd like to participate, but I can't at this time. Thank you.
Now, they have started an internal investigation and have turned up some scandals, and the reporters involved have been complaining that they're being thrown to the wolves, which would suggest they feel that the higher-ups knew all along and are now just putting the blame on them, as has happened in the past.
Well, there was a change of strategy by the paper, by the News Corporation, over 2011. They came into it saying it was one rogue reporter, one private investigator, way back in 2004, 5, 6. Then they had to give up a lot of ground because of what came out, and it obviously was rampant, but they were still basically stonewalling. But once the Millie Dowler revelations of hacking came out and the firestorm that came after that, all of a sudden they had an internal investigation that was separate from the company, moved to a building outside of the regular news buildings where the News Corporation is in London, and they started to probe internally in those organizations. We don't know what kind of overall investigation, internal investigation, the company has done, for example, here in the United States, to anybody here who might know things, for instance, or what were they doing here in the United States.
The story of phone hacking by British tabloids continues to unravel, and if you haven't been following it, we are talking with Frontline correspondent Lowell Bergman about how this all got started and what it means to Rupert Murdoch's media empire. It centered at least initially around the News of the World, the best-selling newspaper in Britain, a weekly. Now, what kind of stories does it publish? Is any news of substance ever published in News of the World?
Well, I mean, substance is a subjective matter, you know, depending on who you are. I mean, and whether the story happens to be true or not, that depends on the standards that you're using. The News of the World basically was a sensational tabloid, and like its sister, the Daily Sun, which now has a Sun on Sunday, you know, features pictures of bare-breasted women, people from outer space, everything you could think of, but in addition, also has some political commentary and would all get involved in some serious investigations from time to time undercover, you know, whatever the market would bear. And then it would also bring to bear its vast audience, because it had a vast audience, its political predilection. So they became, those two newspapers, the News of the World and the Sun, extremely important to anybody who was, for example, running for prime minister.
Rupert Murdoch has had some political clout in this country as well, but we haven't seen the same sort of thing from the Post, have we?
Well, let's stop for a second, okay? Take a look at what's been happening, and maybe you could, because we're talking here about years of prevarication, manipulation, cover-up, and if you could imagine that happening in the United States, where a foreign multinational came in and was the largest media company in the country, and it had a system of bribing the FBI, for example, the largest or most powerful police organization in the country, and had access at the same time to the White House, you get an idea on a regular basis. You get an idea of the kind of power and the importance of this story. I don't think there's been a scandal of this kind in the last half century in the world of journalism, for sure. Now, what's happening here related to it? Remember, this is a U.S.-based multinational company operating in Great Britain. First of all, one of the things that's now come out and come out with testimony in public by the person in head of the new Scotland Yard investigation is that there was a culture of corruption that involved the systematic bribery of public officials in Great Britain. That's illegal for a U.S. company to do overseas.
But it's not there. One thing we hear in your film is that there seemed to be a sort of understanding by editors that if they had a piece of recorded evidence, like a voicemail message, they were protected by law because truth is a defense. Is that the case there in England?
Truth is a defense in libel litigation, which is civil.
Mm-hmm. But hacking somebody is illegal.
Somebody's illegal, as is hacking into their computers, as is getting confidential information that you're not supposed to have, as is paying police for confidential information. Many of the senior executives who have appeared before Parliament, for example, prior to this current public inquiry, had memory lapses. In fact, the parliamentary committee involved said that there was a collective amnesia, in quotes, going on. And that included, for instance, one of Rupert Murdoch's oldest friends and colleagues, Les Hinton, who was in charge of all these operations up till 2007 when he came to the United States to run or oversee the Wall Street Journal and other domestic publications here in the U.S. When he would testify, he would say things prior to this all exploding. Oh, it's one rogue reporter, one private investigator. We've investigated, and we don't know much more than that. So he claimed not to remember. And the question is going to be, when Rupert Murdoch reappears in public at the end of April, before this judicial inquiry, how much he remembers.
Didn't anyone wonder how they were getting some of these stories if they weren't employing questionable tactics to get them?
I asked Kelvin McKenzie, who was described to us by many people as Rupert's favorite editor, and you'll see him in the documentary, and he said that he didn't ask.
Just didn't ask, but people who were
business. Your editor or your lawyer or your deputy editor who oversees what you're doing, they always ask, how did you learn this?
Of course, because they don't want to publish anything that isn't true. And then I'd imagine on the other side, if I wondered how the paper got that story about me without going into my email or hacking my phone, I might bring that question up with the police, wouldn't I?
Well, that's what happened finally. Now, remember, in 2003, as you'll see in the documentary, Rebecca Brooks, who has spent her whole life inside the News International, News Corporation world, and in particular News of the World and The Sun, and became the head of all British newspapers for Murdoch, his favorite, testified before Parliament when asked sort of offhand.
I think we've lost Lowell for a moment, and I wanted to come back to that story anyway. My guest is Lowell Bergman, who is a producer, correspondent for Frontline, and professor of investigative reporting at the Graduate School of Journalism at the University of California at Berkeley, where he heads their investigative reporting program. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Lowell Bergman, Frontline documentary Murdoch Scandal airs tomorrow at 10 p.m. on PBS stations. It also will be streamed live on Frontline's website during the broadcast. Before we were cut off there, you were talking about Rebecca Brooks, who had been editor of the News of the World. Her testimony Later, she was the CEO of News International, wasn't she?
Right. Well, she went from News of the World to the editor of The Sun, and eventually she became, yes, the chief executive in charge of News International and all of British newspapers.
And she was testifying before Congress, questioned by Chris Bryant, who is also another part of this story. And she admitted that News of the World paid police officers. Why didn't the story explode then?
Because no one was interested. And Mr. Bryant, as Mr. Bryant explains on camera, he then went out and tried to drum up some interest, even some interest in Parliament in looking into this. No one would get involved. I know officially the News Corporation says that it never investigated whether bribery was going on at that point, despite the public statements. And Mr. Bryant himself got monstered, as they put it in the language there, which is that the tabloids, those same ones that admitted to bribery, went after him, showing that, revealing that he was gay, showing compromising photos, attempting basically to destroy him.
And that was a policy there. Other targets, including attorneys, public officials, and journalists, were also monstered?
You hear that from many people. I mean, the instances are almost too numerous to catalog. But I think it graduated over the next the rest of this past decade to the point where the people who were involved as members of Parliament and also members of the bar who were investigating what was going on, who were exposing what was going on, found out that they were being followed by private investigators employed by News International.
And then the royals.
Can you imagine that happening in the United States? Members of Congress being followed by a news organization when they were being investigated by Congress?
Well, I can imagine it happening, but I think it probably would have been handled differently. At least one newspaper would have gone after the investigating newspaper, which finally did happen in England with The Guardian. But the story died down again until 2005 when News of the World ran a story about a knee injury suffered by Prince William. Was there an outrage then?
Well, then there was an investigation by the Metropolitan Police, and they concluded that there wasn't enough really to pursue, even though they did pin it on one reporter and one private investigator as to hacking into the phones of the royals, meaning Prince William's aides, actually, about an injury to his knee. But the additional information that they had by then of thousands of voicemails, potentially 100 or more victims at that point, of invasions in using that practice, that was not revealed publicly. Nothing was done to follow it up on. But we know now that they actually briefed Rebecca Brooks about what they found.
And is that,
this is now memorialized in documents. Now, that's pretty unusual.
Now, is that because the Metropolitan Police, which is Scotland Yard, felt that it would be implicated as well as it turned out to be? Were they just protecting their own hides?
There's been no public explanation from the police so far that would explain that briefing. What they have said, what some members of Scotland Yard, that is the assistant commissioner in charge, in particular, who lost his job over all of this, has claimed, as well as someone else in the Metropolitan Police, is that all of this got assigned to a counterterrorism squad, division of Scotland Yard, and that because terrorism was more important than phone hacking, they didn't really bother to look. That, so far, is the only explanation we have.
You also spoke to an attorney named Mark Lewis, who was the first lawyer to go after News International. Who was he representing, and what did he discover?
Well, in the Prince William investigation, the police said, "Oh, we have this reporter, and we have this private investigator, and it looks like aside from the royals, they looked into eight other individuals' phones. That they may have hacked eight other individuals. Those eight individuals who remained unnamed initially were notified. One of them, a man named Gordon Taylor, who was in the head of the Football Association up in Manchester, took great." No story was ever done, because apparently the information that they had gotten off of his voicemail, they had misinterpreted what it meant and didn't run a story. They were going to accuse him of having an affair with the widow of a recent colleague. It turned out that's not what was going on. But he was so angered by this, he retained Mark Lewis, who then filed suit against the police, which you can do in Britain, to find out what else they knew. In the course of that, he learned that this rogue reporter, but he learned this in confidence, that this rogue reporter story was not true. And what Lewis was most surprised by initially was, normally in cases like this, you don't get that much money for an invasion of privacy where no story has been published. And all of a sudden, the chief counsel of News of the World wants to come visit him in Manchester and is offering him 5, 10, 15 times as much money as he would have ever asked for.
But he wasn't allowed to talk about the case, so it looks like a payoff.
They couldn't, right. Well, when they settled it for £725,000,
wow,
he wasn't allowed to talk.
That's almost $1 million.
For a story that never appeared.
In 2009, the story took another turn with an article in The Guardian, a relatively small paper by Murdoch standards, but an important paper in England. What did that report say, and how did they manage to get their story?
Well, a couple of years after the settlement, The Guardian managed to get confirmation because the lawsuits that were settled were actually filed, although there were very few public proceedings. And by following that, one of their reporters, Nick Davies, who, like many of us in this business, gets obsessed with a story, managed to get the documents that showed, A, that huge settlements were being paid, and B, that he indicated from evidence in those cases that the hacking into voicemails was in the thousands, the victims possibly as many. It turned out, so far the police say, well over 800, and that this had been going on for quite a long time.
But then they gained little traction from their piece.
Can you imagine breaking a story like that, and the next day the police go out public and say your story's wrong and there's nothing new there? That the person who seems to be at the head of, at the vortex of all this, Rebecca Brooks, who's the head of all newspapers in England at that point, sends a letter to Parliament, let's say to Congress in this case, and says, this story has no substantiation. It's based on unnamed sources and documents that are not revealed. And this is, you know, causing the public in general to get bad information. And I want Parliament to investigate. And that's what happens.
My guest is Lowell Bergman. He is the reporter on a Frontline documentary called Murdoch Scandal, which airs nationally tomorrow at 10 p.m. It also will be streamed on Frontline's website during the broadcast. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. We're also being streamed right now. We are New York Public Radio. I'm Leonard Lopate. So the New York Times got into this whole situation, and that's what really blew it up in?
Well, it moved it along quite a bit. The New York Times got a call from the editor of The Guardian, Bill Keller, and he decided to put three reporters on it. They did a long piece in the New York Times Magazine, Sunday Magazine, and what they were able to do is produce two reporters on the record who'd worked at News of the World who detail basically if you will, the play-by-play of phone hacking as endemic, along with other, I would say, at least unethical practices that were conducted by the newspaper staff over many years. And that forced the Metropolitan Police to take a look into all of the trash bags they had filled with evidence that they had collected 3-4 years before.
But didn't News Corp simply dismiss what the Times had written as its revenge for the success of the Wall Street Journal under Murdoch?
That's what some editorial commentary from the Wall Street Journal said.
So,
and by the way, commentaries that the Wall Street Journal is unwilling to discuss in public.
But it did finally force the British to go back and reconsider this case. The thing that shocked most people, and you mentioned it earlier, was what happened during the investigation into the disappearance of a young girl named Millie Dowler in 2001. But we really don't learn what happened until 2011. Is this another case of something just being swept under the rug?
Well, it's because the police didn't look in the evidence that they had. They finally notified the Dowler family evidence that they had collected back in 2000 and had in their possession and had analyzed back in 2006, 5 years later, which is 3 years after it happened. But by the way, the Millie Dowler phone hacking and a number of other cases along the way, including victims of the terrorist attacks on the London subway tube system and buses, and other incidents of disappearing children and kidnapped children and murders where they hacked into families' phones. All of that stuff had been going on for over the last decade. So you're talking about stuff that when Rebecca Brooks, that is the woman who becomes head of all the newspapers, is before Parliament in 2003, in some cases she already knew about that, as did the man sitting next to her, who became Cameron's press person.
One of the biggest, the most shocking aspects of that story was that reporters were erasing messages on her, voicemail messages on her cell phone, so that more space would be open, but that led people to think that she was alive.
Well, that's what the family thought and have expressed. It has now come out that the police in the current investigation are not sure that that was a deliberate erasure. At least the initial evidence seems to point to the fact that either happened automatically or more than one individual was hacking into the phone. In other words, Millie Dowler had disappeared. She had her cell phone. Initially, it was alleged by The Guardian that the hacking had resulted in the deletion of messages and that the hacking had been done by the private investigator. It now turns out that a number of days before he ever got involved, the chief reporter for the News of the World had hacked into the phone himself. He's, by the way, been arrested himself, I think now twice. And then also there's a possibility that it automatically deleted for various reasons.
Now, you mentioned The Sun, which is the best-selling newspaper in England. That's also been implicated in police bribes. Hasn't Piers Morgan denied any knowledge of that activity, even though he was the editor of The Sun?
No, he was the editor of News of the World
in
94 and 95, and he spent quite a bit of time there and then went to the Mirror. And Mr. Morgan, who is, on CNN, did testify before the public inquiry, very combative. He makes mention of things like listening to voicemails or what appear to be voicemails in his own memoir. There's some testimony out there that implicates him further in all of this. We do know that when he was the editor of News of the World back in the mid-90s, one of his, deputies or a lower-ranking editor working under him was Rebecca Brooks, who would later become the prominent actor in this whole drama. So Mr. Morgan has denied now that he really himself would have even known about hacking. He was too high up, he said, to have been involved in any of this.
And you just mentioned the case of Andrew Coulson, who was the editor of the News of the World during the time of the hackings, later became Prime Minister David Cameron's communications director. It turns out he'd signed off on police payoffs. Hadn't the Prime Minister known Coulson's names had come up in past inquiries?
He was warned by The Guardian. And The Guardian and others actually tried to get messages to the Conservative Party, because they hired Coulson on actually before they won the election, that they had this potential time bomb in their midst. And they ignored it.
We also learn in your film about the longstanding relationship between politicians and newspapers in Britain, in particular the ones between Murdoch and several prime ministers. What sort of favors took place, and would they be considered legal?
Sure. The same kinds of things that Murdoch got here in the United States took place. You know, Rupert Murdoch has been allowed to have cross-ownership of newspapers and television stations in the same market. He was basically after the same thing in Britain starting the 1980s, just as he was here in the United States. He curried favor with politicians in order to get that. In Britain in particular, because they have this monopoly, sort of a monopoly regulator, he had to get permission in the early 80s to buy the Sunday Times and the Times of London. And in that very controversial purchase, he got his favorite prime minister at the moment, Margaret Thatcher, to allow that to happen. He made all kinds of promises to Parliament about how he would handle that situation. And as we show you on camera in the interview with Harold Evans, another New Yorker now, that he violated all those promises, yet everyone looked the other way. And he's done that repeatedly, and apparently in at least some of the literature we've been able to collect, he's admitted he does that.
Last July, the FBI opened an inquiry into News of the World's interception of phone records of victims of the 9/11 attacks. Have any of Murdoch's U.S. tabloids been implicated in similar behavior?
Well, the allegation that was made in a British newspaper was that there had been hacking into 9/11 victims here by the tabloids, the British tabloids, and not by, I believe, a U.S. entity. It doesn't appear that that investigation is going anywhere, really, at the moment. But what you should keep in mind is that the News of the World and the Sun maintained reporters here in the United States, primarily in Washington and in Los Angeles, that they in turn used private investigators. We know that now, and you can go to our website and you'll see some discussion of that when the film broadcasts. And that use of private investigators included primarily the use of database searches. We haven't seen any hacking activity in that sense going on, a voicemail by people here in the United States. However, there is evidence that the tabloids in Britain hacked into phones of people who were traveling in the United States. I think the primary focus there appears to be of what the FBI investigation could become is looking at the systematic bribery of public officials by News Corporation's subsidiary in Britain. That's illegal for a U.S. company to do. It can result in very big fines and people going to jail.
Just one more thing, Lowell. Rupert Murdoch's son, James, has stepped down as chairman of News International. He was the heir apparent. Is he still, or is Declan, the other son who had been demoted, going to be moved up?
Well, Lachlan has reappeared
after
being in apparent semi-exile for a while with his father. I really am not an expert on and haven't really focused on the genealogy and succession of the Murdoch family. We do know that James has some real problems in Britain because he is maintaining that despite written records and emails, the testimony of the General Counsel of News of the World, a veteran of News Corporation, and an editor of the Sun at the time, he has contradicted them in testimony, and they have sworn that they briefed him on all of this before he signed a check for £725,000. He says he has no memory of ever doing that.
Lowell
or
Bert,
knowing about this stuff.
Or he had never read the emails that were sent to him regard to these
stories. Right, we have part of this collective amnesia that seems to be going on. It's catching.
Lowell Bergman is a producer and correspondent for Frontline, also professor of investigative reporting at the Graduate School of Journalism at the University of California, Berkeley, where he heads their investigative reporting program. The program we've been discussing is Murdoch's Scandal, which will be airing tomorrow night at 10 p.m. on PBS stations, and it also will be streamed on Frontline's website during the broadcast. And Lowell, thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.